interested. Okay, now it does.
So, what we want to do is to look at ways how we can put a group together from a factor group and a normal subgroup. And that is called extension theory. I probably should have said the first thing was paragraph one complements paragraph two extension theory. So I have the situation that I have a short exact sequence and I have this projection here, and I choose a transversal tau, and I will in general identify N with a subset of E to avoid writing maps there. So what we want to do is we want to describe E as sets of pairs, describe E as set of pairs, Gn, where G is in G, and N is in N, and this pair G, N, I want to correspond to the product G tau times N. Okay, and I mean that's the only way how I can, if I have an extension, how I can make this. Okay, and I have two ingredients for describing this. My first ingredient is a map which goes from G to the automorphism group of N, which assigns to an element little g the automorphism which maps N to N conjugated by G tau. Okay. This map itself is not necessarily a homomorphism, because it actually will depend on this choice of representative. But if N is abelian, then N doesn't act on itself, then this is independent on the choice of representative. So if N is abelian, this is a homomorphism. And then we write this as N acted on by G, because it really just depends on G. Okay. We will later mainly concentrate on the case that N is abelian, but the general description doesn't need it. Okay. And the other thing we want is... with the tau, I want that if I take the 1 under G under tau, that shall be the 1 of E. I want to represent the identity with the identity. And what I... The other property, or the other information I have, is a map. Hey, that was quick. Which goes from G cross G to N. Namely, it maps a pair G, H to an element which I call MGH. And how is this defined? It is defined by saying if I take G tau times H tau, well, the coset representative has to be GH, because that's the product of the factor group, but the product of the representatives is not necessarily the representative, but it will differ by something, it will differ by this element MGH. It must differ by something in N, and that's just how I define this map. Okay. In general, one can make a lot of these MGH trivial by carefully choosing the representatives. But you can't do in general. Basically, these MGH are all trivial if and only if tau is a homomorphism, and then if the group is a split extension, if there is a complete. Then obviously you just take the map from the factor group to the complement and all these factors go away, but in general that is not the case. For example, take the cyclic group of order 4. That does not have a complement. Okay. Right, and now we have three properties. Okay, the first property concerns basically these factors MGH for the case that G or H is the identity, and there I'm using this particular property. So I have that M1G is equal to the identity element is equal to MG1. Why is this the case? Well, if you choose the identity element here for G, then G tau is also the identity. And then the identity vanishes, and then obviously they have to be the same. This has to be the identity, and the same for H. Okay. The second property has to do how does this map behave if I apply it twice. So in some way, if N is abelian, any how is a homomorphism, this second property will essentially be a homomorphism property. But how does this behave in general? So let N in N and G, H be elements in G. Then what I want to look at, I want to calculate N acted on by G tau acted on by H tau. What is this? Well, this is H tau inverse G tau inverse N. Oh, where do I write the tau then? G tau H tau by definition. Okay. And that is now taking the products together. Here I have G tau times H tau. What is this? That is by definition GH tau times MGH, and that is the same in inverse as inverse, right? That's GH tau times MGH inverse. So what do I get? That is the same as N acted on by GH tau, and that conjugate with MGH. Okay, and again, if N is abelian, this second conjugation doesn't do anything, and then we see this is just a homomorphism property. Okay, right. So, what do I want to... The third one is the one which looks slightly painful initially, namely that has to do with associativity. So let's assume that let G, H, K be elements of the factor group. And what I'm going to do, leave a row free because I will expand in both directions. I want to calculate g tau h tau times k, no, sorry, parenthesis, I want to do it the other way around because otherwise I didn't leave enough space. H tau times k tau, and we know because it's a group, this multiplication is associative, so this needs to be the same as g tau times h tau times k tau. Right? That is undisputed, that's just the associative law for groups. Okay. What is this? This product is g tau times, okay, h times k tau times m hk. Right? And then what is this product? This is g hk tau, right? G H K tau times M G comma H K times M H K comma K. Okay? Right. Expand it the other way around. What do we get? We get G H tau times m gh times k tau. Okay, the k is not in the right place. We want to move it past. So what we are doing is we insert k tau inverse. So this is gh tau times k tau times m gh acted on by k tau, and that is equal to, now forming this product, gh k tau times m gh comma k times this conjugate m gh acted on by k tau. So what have we? If we now look on the left, we have in both cases GHK tau. We can divide that off. And what do we get? So the second property is, was this one here. And the third property is that MGH, comma, no, MG, comma, HK times MH, K is equal to MGH, K times MG, H acted on by K tau. And that involves basically this acted on by K tau is using this map here. Right? Okay. Right. So, these are the three properties we need. Okay, and with these properties we get the theorem. This theorem is also due to Schreier, the same with the Schreier generators, which says the following. Suppose N and G are groups. If N and G are groups, and I have two functions given, A and B, functions A and B are given such that they fulfill properties 1, 2, 3, fulfill properties 1, 2, 3, Okay, then the set of pairs E, which is the set of pairs G, N, where G is in G, N is in N, with a multiplication okay, so how should be the product G, N times H, let's call it L because I've already used M for the cofactors. What is this product? Well, this product should be, remind us what this should be, g tau times n times h tau times l, right? And that would be equal to moving the h tau past, would be g tau times h tau times n acted on by h tau times l, and this becomes gh tau times mgh, so I get g times h, and here I get mgh times n acted on by h tau times l. That is how I define the product, and the theorem says this is a group. Group such that the map 1 to n to e to g to 1 is exact. And what are these maps here? This would be the map which maps an element n to 1 comma n, and this map here would be the map which maps g comma n to g. Right, that's the obvious thing I want. Okay. And the proof of this is basically just calculation. And that is something I don't want to do on the board. Identity is obvious, that's the element 1, 1. Inverse, you can just calculate what the inverse verse is. Yes, you revert the product, and so you need to act on. The associativity is the big thing. And the associativity is essentially, again, this kind of calculation. It's just, here I've done it essentially just for the left parts GHK. To do it in general, you now need to pull through also a right part, an N1, N2, N3. And it just makes this more messy. This will then take about a full board to just write it all out. But there is nothing extra or miraculous or so happening. So that will be associative. So this is a group. So in some way, that theorem describes everything that is possible. Then
everything possible in that, all the ways that
you can, all the ways how you can put the groups together.
Cool.
Okay. So in some way that is really a nice result. That's how much can you generalize the idea of a semi-direct product? Yes, you can do it that way. What it does not tell you is how do you find maps such that these properties are fulfilled? And the other thing, what it does not do is, and very much not do, is to give you any kind of classification to isomorphism. So there are actually two things which can happen with isomorphism. One thing is that you have in some way the same group and even the same normal subgroup, and just you choose your tau different, you choose your map somehow different, and you get the same, you get in some way even the same group, just because your tau is different, your m is different, you get different multiplications. And that is something we will be able to deal with a little bit. The thing which we will not be able to deal with in a nice way is a group could have two normal subgroups, which could happen to be isomorphic, and could happen to have isomorphic factor groups. And you can construct it for the one normal subgroup, and you construct it for the other normal subgroup. And you get the same group. That is something which this construction process just doesn't see. Or if you want to construct all groups, you look at all possible normal subgroups, all possible factor groups, then it could simply be you can construct the group from N1 and G1, and you can construct it from N2 and G2. So if you really want to go to classifying all groups, and in some way that is typical for combinatorial construction processes, at some point you will have to do hard isomorphism tests. And that is really the bit which makes such classifications hard and difficult. And you can get around a lot of them by using certain lexicographic conditions that you say, okay, if a group has two normal subgroups, I define some kind of order on the normal subgroups, on their isomorphism types. And I say, I want to construct it only for the normal subgroup which is of minimal type. And if there are several, for the factor groups of minimal type and so on. That kills a lot of extra cases. So once you construct a group, you basically see, did I construct it for a minimal situation? But there's, it still leaves isomorphisms there. And isomorphisms which need to be tested. So it is in some way a nice description, but it is not a description which obviously leads itself to a construction. Okay.
If you want to do something slightly weaker, you have a particular N that you care about and a particular G.
Yeah.
Is there like some sort of good condition on when you've picked sufficiently many maps that you can be sure you've got all the E just for that N and G?
Okay. If N is abelian, you basically will get a nice description.
Okay.
And that's the second cohomology group. And that will give you all E's, but again, some of them could be isomorphic because there are others. Yes. If, and that is essentially the next thing I'm going to do, I'm going to say, I want to look at the case that, I mean, first, what is this map? And we said already, if N is, if this map is, this map is trivial if we have a semi-direct product. And in that case, this is an action, this is a homomorphism. And if N is abelian, this is a homomorphism. And then it is, that is nicer to describe, so we will now look at the case that N is abelian. And one can, one can try to see how much can we rescue if N is not abelian. That theorem holds in general. You can try to do something there, but it gets messy. And in the end, it really is not such an obstacle to, and I think I mentioned this or did I mention it just after the end of a lecture? If you look generically at groups, what you can do is you take the largest solvable normal subgroup, that's called the solvable radical. So let me just mention this. This is just an aside. So I will make the assumption that N is abelian.
assumption n is abelian. Why is this a plausible assumption to make? Let's look at a general, if G is a general finite group, I can look at the solvable radical, which is called the radical of G, and that is the largest solvable normal subgroup. Well, if I have two solvable normal subgroups, I can look at the group generated by them that is again solvable by the isomorphism theorems and is normal, so there is a largest solvable normal subgroup. And not just largest by order, but actually largest by inclusion, and it is unique. Okay? Okay. And now I can look at this group in two, there are two very different things happening. I can, on the one hand, look at the radical. This is solvable, so this is composed from vector spaces. I can find a chief series, I can find a chief series, even a characteristic series, so that is a series which is invariant under all automorphisms, where the factors are elementary abelian. Okay. So, anything, if I have this, if I have G modulo R, to get to G, I can get to iteratively by looking at normal subgroups which are abelian. Largest solvable normal subgroup, and these are that I have a series with elementary abelian factors. Yeah, sorry. Okay, so if I know this, essentially the rest of G can be described iteratively with this situation. What can I tell about G modulo R? Well, the socle of G modulo R cannot have any solvable or any abelian factors, because then R wouldn't be the largest solvable normal subgroup. So the socle of G modulo R must be isomorphic to T1 cross T2 cross Tk, where T is simple non-abelian. And G modulo R is acts faithfully on the socle by conjugation. The centralizer of the socle must be trivial, right? The centralizer of a normal subgroup is a normal subgroup, so it must contain a minimal normal subgroup which would lie in the socle, so there would be a bit in the socle which would centralize itself. But it cannot, because we just have non-abelian groups which don't have a center, non-abelian simple groups. So G modulo R is isomorphic to a subgroup. And this is the same thing which we basically had in the proof of the Onen-Scott theorem. It's isomorphic to a subgroup of the automorphism group of the socle of G modulo R. And what is this automorphism group? Well, now I can collect these T's by isomorphism types, and I get the automorphism group of 1T wreath sum S K1, and I get a direct product for different types. Automorphism group of T2 wreath S K2, and so forth. And that is exactly the same thing what we had, in the case of the Onen-Scott theorem, we had only one such group. Here we have possibly different isomorphism types, and they can't be mixed with each other, so the automorphisms just act separately in each of these, for each of these isomorphism types, and I get such a direct product. Okay,
And these kinds of groups, okay, I have subgroups of a direct product, that's subdirect products, I have the wreath products there. That is a very different way how I can describe the subgroups. But in some way, I also have a hold on these possible factor groups. So if I want to construct all groups, that's probably how I would go about doing so. And that's why this restriction to n. In for this case, you probably wouldn't really use this process, which is far more complicated. The wreath product construction, in some way, is far more regular than that construction. And that's why you don't really need to use it for the case of a non-abelian, of a non-abelian n, in particular, a simple non-abelian. Okay, so that's just the justification. Why do we look at this case only? Why don't we do something else? Well, okay, I mean, the two reasons, but the one reason, of course, is because it just gets too messy. And the other thing gives us a nice theory. And the... And yeah, it isn't really so strong restriction. So then we know that the map from G to the automorphism group of N is a homomorphism. Okay. Okay. And now what I want to do is I will look at these possible maps M. So we will call, and I should have said call the maps M, which maps G, comma G to N, where G, H is mapped to M, G, H. I call these factor systems. Just so I have a name for them. Okay. And what I'm going to do is I'm going to define a product on factor systems. And just to simplify the notation, I have a homomorphism, and what I will do is I will write N acted on by G to mean N acted on by G type. Just to avoid further things in the notation. Okay, so how do I want to define a product on factor systems? These are functions to an algebraic structure. And I said, whenever I have functions to an algebraic structure, the set of functions gets exactly the same kind of algebraic structure by pointwise operation. So, if I have M and M star, I define a product, M times M star, on, well, it should be a function again. So, what should it do on a pair g, h? That shall be simply m g h times m star g h. Okay, so this is, and that's just the pointwise operation on these functions. It's again a function. What I want is, it is not just a function, but it is a factor system. So note, M times M star is a factor system.
So particularly it's a homomorphism?
What?
Oh, wait, never mind. Sorry, that's a different
matter. Yeah. Then you need to define what structure you have on the product. It's not a group homomorphism. Okay. Right.
So if the M and M star correspond to different G and H, then they just don't talk to each other.
Well, I think he's just talking about how do you define the product on the.
The product shall be a function. So this product, I want M times M star, which will be a function from G cross G
to
N. And that is just the ordinary, that's the pointwise product on functions. There is that's the one product you generically have every time when you have algebraic structures. Okay. So, what I now want to do is I want to show it is a factor system. And basically what I need to show is property 3. Property 1 is in some way automatically fulfilled. Property 2 is, if n is abelian, property 2 basically follows automatically from this being a homomorphism. So this implies... This implies property 1 and property 2. We don't really need to deal with these anymore. It follows automatically. 1 follows essentially from the convention that we represent the identity by the identity. So, I want to show it is a factor system, so I need to show this property 3. Okay. And that is not hard. That is basically, again, one of those cases where you just need to hold on to the definition and see what do you need to check and have enough trust in your... products to see what is happening. Okay, so what I want to do is I want to evaluate M times M star. Here I want to check this property, right? So, and this is unfortunately, again, a calculation where I'm going in two directions. So I think, given how I have the board, I will go this way and this way. And I leave it to you to decide how you want to do this in your... So I'm looking at M times M star at G H K times M times M star H comma K. So there are two different products in here, right? This is this product of the factor systems, which I just defined here. This is a product of the values, which is just a product in N. Okay. And my question is, how does this relate to M times M star GH comma K times M times M star GH acted on by K. So this equality sign I want to show. Okay. Right. What is the definition of M times M star? That is M G H K times M star G H K times M H K times M star H K. Right? These are functions which are have values in N. And I said, whenever I have a set of functions into an algebraic structure, in this case the algebraic structure is an abelian group, these functions get the same algebraic structures. These functions are an algebraic group. Abelian group. So, these functions commute, or I could even say the values commute, right? N is abelian. So, I can swap these two because n is abelian. So what do I get there? That is equal to m g h k times m h k times m star g h k times m star h k. Okay, and now I'm using that m and m star are vector systems, so they fulfill that property. So this will be equal to m g h comma k times m g h acted on by k, and this will be m star g h comma k times m star g h acted on by k. Okay, and let's do the same thing here. Let's expand this. What is this? This is m times m star g h comma k would be m g h comma k times m star g h comma k times, okay, since the action is a homomorphism and I don't even need that the action is a homomorphism. I'm acting by automorphisms. I can take that product apart and then act on both parts separately. So I get m g comma h acted on by k times m star g comma h acted on by k, right? And these values are elements in n, n is abelian, so I can swap these two. And it turns out these are equal. Right? Once I swap these two terms, I have exactly the same expression there. Yeah. So, this is a product on factor systems. Okay.
So, out of curiosity, are there any weird multiplications that people do to get factor systems as well, or this is just the standard one? Wasn't sure. Or if you know.
Yeah. Can you do other?
I guess that would be it for itself.
I'm not aware of a generic one which would give you something. Basically, once your n is not abelian, such products would become more messy and complicated. And do you want another?
Seems like it's almost pretty rigid, so maybe you can't really.
I mean, you can define other ones, but I think in some way you really want them to be nice objects. Mm-hmm. What you now want to do, and that is basically the next lemma, is to say this is not the product, this actually forms a subgroup. So we have all these possible maps, they form an abelian group. All maps, all such maps form an abelian group. Okay. So I now have a subset of maps which is closed under multiplication. So this is almost the result that it is a subgroup. So let me just state this as a theorem. So, given an action of G on N, and I need that N is abelian.
That is my global assumption now. The possible factor systems M G H form a group under pointwise multiplication. And this group gets a name. It is called the two co-cycles Z2 G comma M. And in principle, I also would need to specify an action. So N is in this case not just a normal subgroup or an abelian group, but it's an abelian group with an action of G, if I write this down. If someone else chooses a different action, you will get a different group. So this N is in the category of abelian groups with action of G, or the fancy name for this would be G modules. Okay. So that is I claim that is a group. Okay. So to show that it is a group, what do I need to have? I need to have an identity. What would be the identity? That would be the map where MGH is always equal to 1. And that map exists and fulfills because the semi-direct product exists. Right? If I have an action homomorphism from G to the automorphism group of N, I can form the semi-direct product. Okay. So the semi-direct product always exists, so that the map having everything equal to 1 is a factor system that is the identity element. Okay, what would be the inverse? That is basically the factor system where M inverse would be the map which maps G, H to M GH inverse. You need to show the inverse fulfills that property. That is not very hard because the group is abelian. Right? If you invert, you need to invert all the factors and revert the order, but because it's abelian, you don't care about reverting the order. So that is immediately there. And the product we've just seen. Okay, so it's an abelian group. It's a group, and it's an abelian group. Yeah, abelian.
And abelian is just from because the group N is
yeah because N is abelian. Yes, yeah. That just follows because N is abelian. Yeah. So this is called Z2. Yeah. What does it mean? These are the two co-cycles. Okay. The obvious question is, well, we had one co-cycles. Are they somehow connected to two co-cycles? Yes, they are, and we'll do this in a little while. So, we have this group. And that group, by what we have done, corresponds to all possible extensions. Right? Schreier's theorem said every possible way is described by such, by having these two maps. And we are saying, okay, if N is abelian, the first map is just given, the possibilities for the first map are homomorphisms from G to the automorphism group of N. I assume I've chosen one such homomorphism. Then the possible extensions are in correspondence to the elements of this group. note. Given an action, then I have a correspondence between extensions one and elements of Z two. Okay. But the thing where the correspondence is really to such extensions where I specify what the tau is, where I specify my choice of coset representatives. And that's typically something which I don't care about. I care about the groups I'm getting in the end. So, the question we get, rather obviously, is what happens if we change tau? How does this affect the extensions? Okay, and what you will get is basically a subgroup which are called the two co-boundaries, and the factor group will be called the second cohomology group, and that will correspond to extensions without having to choose or specify these transversals. Okay. So now, choice of tau. What happens if I choose a different tau? So, if we change tau to tau tilde, then what would happen? We would have that g tau tilde has to be equal to g tau times some element in n, and I will call this element cg, where C is a map from G to N. Right? So, whatever map I whatever different different maps taus I can choose, they just correspond to such maps C from G to N, which if I have fixed one tau as a base point. So, what effect does this have on the factor systems? Okay. So, what I'm going to do is I'm going to multiply two a g tau tilde times an h tau tilde. Right? And if I do this, I get, and again, sorry, this will be again both directions, so I have g tau times cg times h tau times ch, and I want this to be interpreted. This is what this is to be interpreted as simply this is g tau tilde times h tau tilde. Right? What is this? This is on the one hand, and then, yeah, in some way that would be the blue evaluation, that is by definition gh tau tilde times an m tilde for gh, right? That's how I define the factor systems. And if I want to go back from tau tilde to tau, I get
GH tau times C on the product GH times M tilde GH. Okay. On the other hand, this is a product I can evaluate using just tau. So I want to move this past here by conjugation, so I get G tau times H tau times CG acted on by H times CH. And that is equal to GH tau times M GH times CG acted on by H times CH. Okay. And if I now cancel off GH tau on both sides and I solve for M tilde GH, what do I get? Get that M tilde GH is equal to, and now I'm using that N is a bit, well, here I didn't, you could even have kept it for the let's assume we are in the Abelian case. You could have said, oh, here you have the action of H tau, and you have, you could do this in the non-Abelian case, but let's concentrate on the Abelian case. Then what is happening? So then I can solve for M tilde GH, and this is, and then I can just bring this over here. This is M GH times C GH inverse times CG acted on by H times CH. Okay. So, what I do is I define these things as maps on G, H. Okay. So, let I will call this the two co-boundaries B2 for G, N be the set of those maps. Let's call them for the moment F, which go from G cross G to N. It's those maps, okay. And what I want is there exists a map C from G to N such that F GH is simply C GH inverse times CG acted on by H times CH. Okay. So, right. And that is some subset of maps. So what it actually is so note B2 G, N is the image of the set of maps from G to N under the map which takes a map C, and that is mapped to this product. It's the map which maps the pair GH to CGH inverse CG to the H times CH. Okay. that map we have seen before. We wrote it additively. The one co-cycles, when we looked at complements, where the kernel of this map kernel was the one co-cycles. Right there in the one co-cycles, I said, okay, let's assume we would have a semi-direct product. So we have an action of G on N. And anyhow, here again, I have the action of G on N is kept fixed. The one co-cycles are the kernel of that map. The image of this map, I call, are the two co-boundaries. Okay. And as image, if you show this map has is a homomorphism on from groups, right? The set of functions are groups. Then you know the image is a subgroup, or you can just verify directly that this is a group. Okay. So let's look at some properties of these maps. Okay, what is the first property? The first property is that B2 G, N is a subgroup of Z2 G, N. So what I need to do is these maps fulfill the property for two co-cycles. Well, that is just evaluating. That's of the similar level as showing that the product of two co-cycles is a two co-cycle. That is not hard, it's not fun to write it down, it's multiple indices, but that is rather straightforward. Okay. Right. How did we actually get to this group B2? Well, we got from it by looking at what happens if we are changing the transversal. So, if we have two extensions, where I have an extension E1, which corresponds to a map tau 1, and I have an extension E2, which corresponds to a map T2, and here, of course, I have in both cases the projection. Okay, in the extension, I now look as set of pairs, right? So pairs G, N. So the projection is in some way clear what is meant. The projection would be the projection on the first component. Right? Okay. If I have two such extensions and they corresponding to the same group, E, by change, so probably I should even, in some way, I assume that E1 is actually equal to E2. Yeah, so. Somewhere as groups, they're equal. Four different choices of tau. Okay. Well, all possible ways to form extensions correspond to two co-cycles. If I want in the end that it's the same group, or that I have an obvious, that the obvious map is a bijection between, it's not the obvious map is a bijection, but what I want is that they are isomorphic. So, okay. I think I need to be slightly more careful. What do I mean by same group? Because that becomes a bit So I have an exact sequence 1, NE1, G1. I have a second exact sequence 1, NE2, G2. Okay. And now, obviously, there I have the identity map. There I have the identity map. From N to N, I have an identity map. And from G to G, I have an identity map. Okay. And what I now want is, I want an isomorphism such that this diagram becomes commutative. Okay. Well, the taus I have there, but the taus are not part of the diagram. So I want this isomorphism to make the diagram commutative. And what do I mean by making the diagram commutative? It means that at every situation where I can go right or down, if I go right and down or down and right, or whatever way I go, if I follow different paths to the same image, I end up with the same result. And essentially, because this is built from rectangles, I just need to look at single rectangles. Okay. And essentially, the only place, okay, this is clearly commutative. This is clearly commutative. There is nothing to show, because I have identities there and the same map. So, here I don't need to show something, because that is the... I need to define this. What does this mean that this is commutative? So, this means under this isomorphism, pairs 1, n must be mapped to pairs 1, n. And where would a pair G, 1 be mapped? G, 1 would be mapped to, okay, now they will differ by, I had said they differ by such a function C, right? So G would be mapped to the pair G, CGH inverse times CG acted on by H times CH. That's for example. And then one needs to do it for products. Okay. Okay, and then I want that if I go from this group, I project to G, I have the same that if I take the isomorphism and I project to G. And yes, clearly that is happening. So if I have two such extensions which are in a way the same, then the transversal maps differ by such a function C, differ by C, and the factor systems differ by an element, well, it's actually the associated element of B2 G, N. That's just what we calculate. They differ by this thing as a function from G, G. So, putting it together, what we can say is extensions up to this equivalence Thank you.
equivalence of extensions. Okay, so equivalence, every equivalence of extensions is an isomorphism of groups. But not every isomorphism of groups is an equivalence of extensions. Because I want the isomorphisms which basically don't do anything on N and don't do anything on G. So, I could make an isomorphism formally between extensions that I simply apply some automorphism of N which does something. That would formally make different things, and that is just not encompassed by this situation. If I look at extensions, I have N and G fixed. Okay. Up to equivalence of extensions are in bijection with what is called the second cohomology group, H2GN, which is Z2GN modulo B2GN, and that is called the second cohomology group. Okay. So, what do we have here? We have now a description of this, in the case that N is abelian, of describing all extensions with something which is an algebraic structure. Okay. That is nice. So, I think before going further with formal definitions, this is a situation where one now needs to look at examples to understand what is happening. Let's say we pick for N and for G the cyclic group of order 2. Okay, that's basically the smallest example where something can happen. And that is abelian. Okay, so what I first need to do is I need to describe the possible actions, the homomorphisms from G to the automorphism group of N. Well, there aren't any, right? Fisms from G to the automorphism group of N. The automorphism group of C2 is trivial because that group just has two elements. One is the identity, which has to stay the same, and then the other one doesn't have much choice where to go, so it also has to stay the same. So the automorphism group is trivial, so I have exactly one homomorphism. Okay. So, there is only one, only the trivial one. Okay. So, what I now want to do is, I want to calculate Z2 and I want to calculate B2. Okay. So let's first look at B2. So to calculate B2, I need to look at the possible maps C from G to N, right? So consider the maps which go from G to N, And let's call the, well, let's give the elements a name. I have the identity here and have an element A, and here I have the identity and I have an element N. And of course, as groups N and A are the same element, I'll just give them different names so we can distinguish what is element and what is image. Okay, so what maps can I have? I can have the map which maps everything to the identity. I can have the map which maps everything to N. I can have the map which maps 1 to 1 and A to N. And I can have the map which does it the other way around, which maps 1 to N and A to 1. Right? That's all possible maps. I have 4 such maps. Okay. Now I want to look at B2. B2 are maps from G cross G to N. Right? So, what are the maps which go from G cross G to N? Well, such a map I can describe by saying, what is it? I have a pair G, H, and this is the G part, and this is the H part, right? G could be 1 or A, and H could be 1 or A. Okay, but any such factor systems, the first condition of the factor system was that if one of the arguments is 1, the image has to be 1, right? That was the choice that we represent the identity with the identity. So there is really just 1 such element here. Okay? So, I will represent the maps just by this value. Okay. So, what value do I get? So, now I'm mapping from here to B2. Or actually, I'm mapping into Z2. So, what values do I get? Well, what I need to do is I need to calculate the value. This is the value C, the value MAA, which would be CAA inverse times CA acted on by A times CA. Okay, and CAA inverse is of course the identity inverse, so that's C identity inverse. I said I only have a trivial action, so the action vanishes, times CA times CA. Okay. And I want, and I don't want arbitrary maps. I want maps which map the identity. That is again our convention, where the identity is mapped to the identity, right? That were all the maps I'm doing. So this one and this one actually are not allowed. Sorry. That's just the convention which gives us the ones here. And it is not a convention which is needed, it's just a convention to make the problem slightly easier. Okay, so what do I get here? Well, all have value 1, 1 inverse times 1 times 1. So I just get the value 1. Okay? What do I get here? I get C1 inverse, that is 1. So here I get 1 times 1 inverse times n times n.
but n is an element of order 2. So that is also 1. Okay? So my b2 is trivial. Okay. So now I need to calculate my Z2. So what condition do I have there? Well, that was the condition I had, this condition which I called number 3. Which was that MGHK times times MHK is equal to
to the conjugated by K or something?
Yeah, tem M G H comma K times M H K conjugated. No, M
G comma H
G comma H conjugated by K. Okay. So, what I would need to do is to calculate the kernel of that map. Okay, that looks ugly. But actually, in our case, because of this convention, this whole space, we know we are in a one-dimensional space. So, what I will do is, to get a basis of a one-dimensional space, or if I'm in a one-dimensional space, if I have one non-zero element, I know that will be a basis, right? So, what I do is, and that is in some way cheating, note, if I take the map M, which corresponds to 1, 1, 1, N, this fulfills. Okay. And, yeah, now, so, what would this condition actually mean? I could put entries, actually, it's a set of conditions. I need to run over all triples of elements, and these are values in here, and it's a condition on these values that certain sums up. Okay, and with the triples, well, the action is anyhow trivial, so there nothing is happening. If the triples are all just involving the identity, things are fine.
The only one that really we need to check is when they're all the second.
With the identity it is fine. I think the only one is really the one where all three are the non-identity element. Okay, and that is not... So, if we do fulfills, let's say G, H, K are the element A, well, then what do I have here? I have M, G, H, K. Then H, K is the identity in G. So this is 1. M, H, K would be N. M, G, H is the identity. So M, G, H, K. G, H is the identity, so that is the identity. And M, G, comma, H. g comma h is n, then indeed I have n is equal to n. Okay. And the other ones are tested exactly in the same way. It's not something which is fun to do by hand. Okay. But what we see is that map fulfills this condition. So what I know is that Z2 is isomorphic to the field with, right? Everything is over the field with two elements. If I look at it as linear maps, because this is a C2, it's a field with two elements. So that is of dimension one. So H2 modulo B2 is the one-dimensional space modulo the zero-dimensional space. That's a one-dimensional vector space that has two elements. Okay, so I have two possible extensions. Well, we knew that before. There is the Klein 4 group, and there is the cyclic group of order 4. Okay, the Klein 4 group is the semi-direct product. Well, I don't have an action, so it's a direct product. So that will correspond to the trivial factor system. To the factor system where I also have one here. If I choose this factor system, what am I telling with this multiplication structure? I'm saying if I pick a representative for the non-identity element in the factor group and I square that element, I end up with an element of order 2. So this representative has order 4. That's a very convoluted way of saying I have an element of order 4 in there. But that's indeed what happens in these two groups. So I have a description of these two groups, and I've classified all possible groups of order 4 which are put together in that way. Okay. In some way that looks rather disappointing as a result from the effort we have put in. So what I will do next time is to give you a somewhat larger example, but that's one which I have to do with a computer. Because very quickly, the number of these equations just grows enormously quickly. And that is a lot of work to check things by hand, in particular if something interesting is happening. So what I'll do next time is to look at the case where the normal subgroup is Klein 4, and the factor group is S3. One of the cases we should get is the symmetric group S4. And we should get the direct product. But yeah, are there more? Okay. Yeah, that's all I have. Thank you very much.
Quick question. You're talking about the C2. You said we want the kernel of this map. Do we just mean things that satisfy that equation?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Great.
And it's just satisfying this equation. Okay, now if you look at the maps, and you look at the maps, well, by writing this here as vectors, right? Then this condition is really just become, these are conditions, okay, you're writing additively, this multiplication becomes a sum. It's that the sum of two entries is equal to the sum of two other entries, or the sum of this entry and that the image of that entry under the action. Right? So I get, these are linear conditions among the entries, and which conditions I actually get depends on how the product and the factor group works. But that's, then they are, if the condition is this plus this is equal to this plus this, that is clearly a linear condition. If you look at them just as vectors. And that's why I'm talking about the linear system and kernels. Okay?
Right.
Because, and that is really in some way the power of it. Because not just there are some equations, that's probably something I should have said more clearly. Yes, it looks horrible, but they are linear equations. And linear equations is the one thing we can do.
It is, they are ugly, there are lots of them, it's a penalty to write it down, but there are linear equations. In principle, there is a full theory which describes what is happening. And that's why one can do this, and why one can actually construct these extensions. And you'll see next time that basically the only mess is in building all of these equations. But otherwise, we will look at these possible, at all these maps as vectors. Okay, here I write the vectors a matrix, but they're just vectors. And the entries, of course, if n is not one dimensional, every entry would have multiple components, so they are actually vectors which are even longer. But yeah, then you get some conditions among the entries of these vectors, and you solve the system, and you look at the images you get, and you look for a basis, and that gives you all possibilities. Okay, thank you.
2 here was just a nice, like, by hand computable example. This should work the same way if n and